Open your Bibles once again to the book of Proverbs. Chapter 22. I guess we'll start there this evening. We started teaching on the subject of child discipline, what the Bible teaches in the book of Proverbs on discipline. Discipline isn't the only part of child training or rearing children, but it's part of it. And so we started to cover several things, and we laughed we left off last week on how to discipline. And we looked at Proverbs 13 and Proverbs 19, where it says betimes, which means early. If you wait till your kids are 8, 10, 12 years old, you've waited too long. You need to discipline them when they are young. And we talked about that. Then let me start here this evening. It must be used in the midst of right training. And I want you to look here at verse 6 of Proverbs chapter 22. Train up a child in the way that he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. Correction, and we'll maybe look at these other verses a little bit later on, but I'll mention it now and I'll mention it again later. 5 times in the book of Proverbs, the word rod is used. Correction and the use of the rod is only a small part of training a child. It is a training program to teach the children the way that they should go in. That's what Proverbs 22:6 says. And in the midst of that, if a child refuses to obey, then that child must be corrected with the rod. But let me add this, with full understanding. You should never discipline a child if a child does not know why they're being disciplined. A child must be old enough to communicate and to understand why they're being disciplined, and they must be disciplined, if you have to discipline them, with full understanding. Now, if it isn't just the rod that causes a child to go the right way. It is also the training. So let me mention 7 things, first of all, this evening. What does that entail? When I'm going to train a child to go in the right way or in the way that he should go so he won't depart from it, what does it entail? First of all, it entails this. You need to develop a close relationship with your child. I don't know the exact address off the top of my head, but one of the Proverbs says this. My son, give me thine heart. You want to reach the heart of a child. So you develop a close relationship with the child so that you can reach the heart of a child. I would dare guess that there are a lot of parents who have tried to raise their children who have never been able to reach their heart. Some of us didn't realize the importance of that. Some of us just didn't know how to do that. Some of us didn't even try to do that, whatever the situation is. But let me mention to you, develop a close relationship with each child. Secondly, teach the Bible to your children. Teach them the Bible. If you're going to train them in the way that they should go or in God's ways, you have to teach them the Bible. Now, the church is here to help. As a matter of fact, when you read Ephesians chapter 4, pastors and teachers are given in the church to teach you the Bible and to teach your children the Bible. So you should always have your children in church with you so they can be under the teaching of the Word of God according to Ephesians chapter 4. However, beyond that, you should teach your children the Bible at home as well. Thirdly, build moral character in them. Try to build some character into your children. Teach them the basic, normal things of life. So build moral character. Don't pattern your morals after the standard of the world. Okay? Pattern your morals after the standard of the Bible. Build moral character in them. Number 4, reach the heart with the truth. Jesus said, "You shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." Reach your child's heart with the truth. Number 5, educate them in the dangers that await them in the world. Did you know the world is a scary place out there? As a matter of fact, if I don't spill this glass of water, it's going to be nothing short of a miracle. It's worse now than it's ever been. I mean, the stuff that goes on, that happens in this world, is just bizarre. And your kids, and I mean Bill and I were talking a little bit about that earlier, it's really bizarre out there. you need to educate your children in the dangers that await them in the world. Now, you cannot shelter them from the world forever, particularly the guys. Sooner or later, they have to go out and get a job. They're going to work with lost people, some with a very, very few exceptions. They're going to work with lost people. Even if they have their own business, they're going to be working for lost people. So that's part of it. And they're going to see the dangers of the world. Educate them about how dangerous the world can be and warn them about it. Number six, teach them to be faithful and loyal to the church. Dr. Heimer's, I've read where he said this once, be fiercely loyal to the local church. Teach your young people to be loyal to the church so they stay under the teaching and preaching of God's word that'll influence and impact their life. Number seven, show them how to serve the Lord. You show them how to serve the Lord. Some people ask me from time to time, we have an evangelism blitz this Saturday, for instance. Is it okay if we bring our kids out and do evangelism work with them? Yeah, that's fine. Bring them out. Well, what if they're only this big? It might be an advantage. Bring them out. They might not kick them off the porch when they'd kick you off the porch if you didn't have them with you. So bring them out. Not a problem. Teach them how to evangelize. Teach them how to give. They should know by the time they get old enough and they have a job, or I don't know how many parents give their kids allowance. Did we ever give you guys an allowance? Did we? Faith says no. Darren says yes. They don't even know who gave who an allowance. Anyway, I don't think. Well, you should have worked really hard. This comes with the territory. That's, by the way, unfortunately. Did you guys, this is a little bit of a side trail. Did you see where the Amish farmers, the government wants to make it illegal for the Amish even to have their children working on their farms before they're the age of 18? That's absolutely foolish. It's absurd. You know, and I was, this is how you learn responsibility. You get off the bus when you're 13 years old and you go out to the barn and you feed the cows. Nobody has to tell you how much to feed them. You've been told once how to do it. You've been taught once and you go out. You've been trained, and so you go out and you do it. But you got to teach them to do those things in spiritual, like evangelism, like giving, like general service. If you're somebody here that cleans the church, and Amy always says we need more church cleaners now, school is out, bring your children out and let them clean the church. They will appreciate it a whole lot more. Earlier, I was walking down the sidewalk. Lynn was walking over to the office, I think it was Lynn, with me, and I mentioned, doesn't the flower beds look nice? Mrs. Gamut takes care of all that stuff, and her and Gary Ertz, they do it all. He trims, and they plant, and they do all kinds of things out there. Those two people, they put a lot of work into that thing, and it looks nice. Teach your kids how to serve the Lord in general areas. Let me say this. Parents who serve Christ with their children when their children are juvenile age usually have the joy of seeing their children serve Christ later on in life. I say usually. You say, well, I know of several. That's not always true. We have missionaries that their children aren't serving the Lord. Some of them aren't saved. We have pastors whose children never serve the Lord. I understand all that. But generally speaking, when we serve the Lord with our children, when they get older, we have the opportunity to see them serve the Lord as well. But training here in Proverbs 22:6 says, in the way that they should go. God's ways that keep them off the broad way that leads to destruction, keeps them off of that as we train them to walk the narrow way that leads to life everlasting. Now, discipline, this is my third point under whatever the first point was I started with last week. Discipline, go back to chapter 13, must make proper use or effective use, however you want to say that, of the rod. Proverbs 13:24 says this. He that spareth his rod hateth his son, but he that loveth him chasteneth him betimes. You're not to spare the rod. Go backwards a little bit to chapter 3. Verses 13 and 14. Happy is the man that findeth wisdom, and the man that getteth understanding. That's not the verse I want, although that'd be a happy guy. Chapter 22. We were over there. I should have read this verse earlier. This is where we started 2 weeks ago. Foolishness is bound in the heart of a child, verse 15. But the rod of correction shall drive it far from him. What does the rod of correction do? It drives the foolishness far from him. And then chapter 29, we'll just look at three of them, but there's five of them that are mentioned. Verse 15. The rod and reproof give wisdom, but a child left to himself bringeth his mother to shame. Perhaps that's where they got, where it says the rod and reproof give wisdom. Perhaps that's where they got the phrase, apply the board of knowledge to the seat of education. Maybe it came from that particular verse. I don't know. Let me look up another verse here, just off the top of my head. Yeah, go back to chapter 23. Verses 13 and 14. Withhold not correction from the child, for if thou beatest him with the rod, he shall not die. Thou shalt beat him with the rod, and shall deliver his soul from hell. Now, five times the rod is mentioned in Proverbs. Let me say this about the rod. A rod is not your hand. I don't think you should use your hand to spank your child. This is a hand of love. It feeds them. It's supposed to be tender. It says rod. It doesn't say hand. It's not a belt. It's not a leather whip. It's not a fist. It's not a slap. It's not a kick. It's not yelling and screaming or whatever. That's not what it is. Webster defines the rod as this: a shoot or long twig of any woody plant, a branch, or the stem of a shrub. You know what it is? It's a switch. And you know what it does? It stings. It doesn't damage, but it gets the point across. It stings, all right? And then it said in Proverbs 13:24, it's not to be spared. Now that means you need to use the rod from time to time. I would say this before I go any further. I've tried to mention this, make it clear. You shouldn't use the rod when you're angry. Because if you use it when you're angry, you might hurt somebody. That could actually go into abuse. And you don't want to do that. And I don't think you should ever use it on an infant, because an infant doesn't understand anything. But, and it says train up a child. But it can be spared. How is it spared? By withholding it altogether. Now, I know when we teach on this, there are some people, there's a lot of people today, that are against the use of a rod. It's still in the Bible. And it still works. Some people withhold it altogether. That's not a biblical philosophy of child training. Some parents use psychological tricks. Some parents use manipulation. Those all are really a lack of love for the child. They also withhold it from time to time when it should be used. Of course, you're the parent. You should have enough wisdom to know when it should be used. But why is it spared? Why do sometimes parents spare the rod? Because the child is crying. Well, the rod is supposed to make the child cry. That's one of the purposes of it. I didn't know this when my kids were little, but it wasn't my kids that told me this either. It was somebody else that when they got older, they were talking about how when their parents used to spank them. And the brother and the sister were talking. And they were talking about, this is how I got my dad or my mom to quit spanking me after one or two little licks. I started crying. And they had figured out, if I start crying, mom or dad is going to stop. So, which it never dawned on me that a child would figure that out. So they thought, huh. So the other one says, that's what, because they were arguing who got more lashes, I don't know how to say that, who got the most lashes during spanking time, or however you want to say that. And the girl said, well, I always got more than you. And the guy said, that's because I learned how to cry right away. So when you start crying softly right away, they would stop. You have to figure out your own children and know if they've got that figured out, just to get you to stop, or if you have indeed broken them. I wouldn't say that with the little kids in here, because they would figure that out. Ah, we know it, Pastor. We'll remember that one. except for one. There's one in here. But, you know, some of those guys actually figure that out. It's spared sometimes because the child cries. You know another reason why it gets spared? You get weary. You said, oh, my goodness, how many times have I got to discipline this kid? I just give up, and I'm weary. Probably more than any other reason. Or impatience with the slow process of discipline and training. It just gets slow, and it gets weary. And you said the same thing 143 times over and over and over and over, and you're like, I give up. So you get impatient with the slow process. I will remind you, it can be a slow process. Sometimes you will not use it because interference of friends or relatives. Oh, you're abusive. Oh, you're this. Oh, you're that. And you feel that peer pressure, and so you stop using it. Sometimes you just get totally frustrated, and you decide you're not going to use it anymore. But discipline must include the rod, and discipline must make effective use of the rod. I should stop here, but let me give you just a little bit more. It is to be used when a child is rebellious. A biblical rod is a rod of correction. The Bible said, foolishness is bound in the heart of a child, but the rod will drive it far from him. That child's foolishness, you would know it more readily today as rebellion. You say, well, my child isn't rebellious. Yes, they are. Every child is rebellious. I was rebellious. You were rebellious. Your children were rebellious. Everybody's, to some degree or another, everybody's rebellious. Foolishness is bound in the heart of a child. So you use the rod to drive it far from them. And it's to be used when a child is in rebellion. It's a rod of correction. It is not to be used just when you are frustrated with the child, which happens. It's used to correct the child that refused to listen to verbal commands and instructions, and it's used to correct disobedience and rebellion. Now look at chapter 23 again. I think you're there, 13. Withhold not correction from the child. For if thou beatest him with the rod, he shall not die. It needs to be used with the proper force to correct the child, but not abusive. It should hurt, and it should hurt enough to get the point across and to bring real heart-level submission from the child to the parent. But if the rod is used and the child persists in disobedience, then there's a good chance that the rod is not being used sufficiently or hard enough or something along that line. I'll close with a little story. Dan was little. He's our oldest son. We were in Bible college, and I don't know what he was doing. He was crawling around the floor, and I was working at my desk. And I was throwing, you know, you got a garbage can next to your desk with papers in it. So he decides, he's probably 9-10 months old. He comes crawling over and reaches into the garbage can and takes out a piece of paper. Well, he wasn't supposed to be in the garbage can. So we told him, no. Put the paper back in there. No, Daniel, don't do that. He was old enough at 10 months old to understand no. Well, he reached straight up. He reached straight up there and got another one right up. So then he smacked his hand a few times. And while he was crying, this is rebellion. While he was crying, he looked right at me or her, I forget which, and reached straight into that garbage can and did it again. That was not a smart move right there, let me tell you. So then he really got it. He got it hard enough to know that, you know what, there wasn't a fourth time. The first time, he got a verbal warning. The second time, this didn't go on all day. The second time, he got what you would call a spanking on the hand. The third time, while he was still crying from the second time, he got it worse. He never went back for the fourth time. It has to be hard enough to get the point across that the child realizes the best thing for me to do right here is to submit to the authority that I am under. And that's one of the goals that you're trying to attain, is the child to submit to your authority. If you fail at getting your child to submit to your authority every time, you have not disciplined or corrected the child properly. You just haven't. All right, so you may have to work on that a little bit. Anyway, I'll stop there, and hopefully, Lord willing, we'll finish this lesson up next week.